All right, hello and welcome to another episode of the Long Ball Football Podcast, a weekly podcast about all things football in Portugal. You're listening to myself, and I'm joined by the main men, Andrew and Kevin. I'll come to you first. Andrew, how you been? A good week for your boys, so things are looking good?
Yeah, very happy. Just happy to have football back. But yeah, starting the season off with a win is never a bad thing. So yeah, very happy so far.
And Kev, a bit of a mixed bag. Obviously, Sporting, very good, getting off to a winning start. Maritimo, however, wasn't quite the same story.
Yeah, all of a sudden it looks like everything is beautiful for Sporting, but after everyone being in panic for a little while, after the Supertaça, that win was needed. We'll get into it, but yeah, the less we talk about Maritimo at this stage, the better, because it seems like it's going from bad to worse. They just got the new investor in, all well and good. Yeah, bring the investment now, because yeah, that was painful. Wow.
Yeah, well, as discussed, we will be preparing a Maritimo special very soon where we can dip into their fortunes in great detail. I should start by saying, of course, if you haven't listened to our season preview show, which we released last week, I recommend you do so for two reasons. One, of course, you would have heard us introduce our brand new co-host, Mr. Andrew Patiso, Kevin Fernandez, who you just heard from, if you're wondering who these fine gentlemen are. But equally for the cutting edge analysis that we offered. And as Andrew rightly pointed out before we started recording, we all chose four teams from outside of the big three to keep an eye on the season as teams to watch. I went for Vitória, Andrew went for Nacional, I believe, Kevin for Santa Clara, and Barney for Alverca. And what do those four teams have in common? Well, they all managed to lose on the opening day of the season. So that just shows you the level that you get from the Long Ball Football Podcast every week. So make sure you stick around for more input like that. And I should do, as I forgot to do last week at the beginning, of course, plug our Patreon. If you enjoy the show, if you want to get involved, you can do so for £1 a month. Get involved in the Long Ball Football community and help keep the lights on at Long Ball Football HQ. But that's enough jibber jabbering. I think we should get stuck straight in, gentlemen. There were some big results over the weekend, and I'm going to start with last year's champions, the team that kicked us off this season on Friday night, Sporting won 2-0 away at Casapia. Goals either side of the break from Francisco Trincão and Morten Hjulmand secured all 3 points in a game that Rui Borges described as the best game since I've been at Sporting. Kevin, I'll come to you first as the Sporting fan. What was your take on the game and how much do you agree with that statement from Rui Borges?
I'm very, very close to agreeing with him, to be perfectly honest, because that
fantastic.
Was about as good as it got. First half, particularly, the result wasn't particularly flattering for Sporting, considering the football that they played. The domination that they had in the first half, it was very much a case of an old tale of Sporting, of unwinning of the past at stages, which was a lot of chances, ball just wouldn't go in, the final touch was lacking. And it seemed like it was going to be a little bit more of that fate. And perhaps if there wasn't a goal before the half-time point, a few nerves would kick in amongst the fan base at this stage, because obviously after the Supertaça loss and a pre-season that wasn't particularly convincing for all the fans, people have been mixed on Rui Borges. So a convincing performance and scoreline was probably exactly what the doctor ordered. And in the end, 2-0 was probably flattering Casapia, considering their performance was very disappointing for a side that's usually very compact and very difficult to break down. Yeah, you can't really put anything against Sporting. Usually, the sticking point has been with Rui Borges that in the second half, things tend to die down a bit in terms of intensity. The team drops back and kind of invites pressure, if anything, just because maybe the energy levels weren't up there and the initial phases of play perhaps aren't 100% sustainable. Perhaps you could point that out in the second half of Sporting, because the first half was better than the first, than the second, I should say. You could say that, but then again, sometimes that is natural. And as we're probably going to get into eventually, there were two injuries and the rhythm was completely broken that second half. So a little bit of difficulty, a little bit of trial and tribulation, considering it is the first game of the season and Sporting did not look up to the races in pre-season. I'll give them a little bit of slack in that aspect. Other than that, I was very impressed with Sporting's just capacity to get reach the final third of absolute ease. Casapien seemed to have no sort of solution for either Fresneda coming from the back three that he forms to create an overload over the right-hand side, or even just Inacio getting on the ball and making things happen. Cassiano tried to man-mark, but it seemed like they just had no option. They had no solutions to the ball getting in there, and the front three looked, it's particularly, I would say, more Trincão and Pote. They looked so fluid, and they were just drawing markers away. Casapia just looked kind of all over the place, and it's very uncharacteristic for them to seem like they really, especially down the wings, they really had no idea what to do, who to mark, where to be. Other than Chamba and probably Patrick Skater, who are by far two standout performers. And I do expect Casapia to look better in other games that perhaps a little less taxing. They're always quite reliable. I think it's very, very poor and uncharacteristic from them. And at the same time, a great performance from Sporting, who looked very up to the task, very energetic, great on the press. And for as much talk has been had about the three at the back or four at the back or however you want to define the system, end of the day, it did work. And if Sporting continue to look like that, along with another team we're probably going to mention, looks like that we have a very stable competitor at the moment, and it could only get better since Vagianidis has arrived and there are murmurs of a big signing at the left wing position.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the most important for Sporting was, like you say, to just ease into that first game and leave any kind of nerves behind them, which I think they did. Like you said, maybe the nerves would have kicked in if they didn't get the first goal in the first half. But I think you could see from the beginning that while not 100% flawless, I think it was a very competent performance, and the players looked motivated and they looked well coached, and you know, clearly it was a very positive, very attacking game from Sporting, particularly in the first half, which I enjoyed very much. And I think from my perspective, Andrew, the most important thing was something that I touched on in our preview show, which was about the key players who are already there making a big impact in a way, because, and you know, I hate to bring it up again, but the Vitor Jaquez move really kind of, I think, overshadowed a lot of the players that are already there. It was kind of built up into this moment where Sporting were losing this talismanic player, and could they do it without him? Whereas for me, I still felt like in this squad there are so many high quality players, especially for this level, with the likes of Francisco Trincão, Pedro Gonçalves, and those type of players who were very effective in this game. And it looked like, to me, a team of very highly skilled, very competent players with a good coach who are ready to have a good season despite the loss of this, you know, the well, so-called talisman. I say so-called, he was, of course, but you see what I'm saying.
Yeah, definitely. I think this is something we highlighted last week, or at least I did, about the individuals within the team and how the way Rui Borges has them playing now, with that sort of high intensity, very incisive, very quick way of moving the ball. You do have to rely on your better players, and they have to stay fit for this to really be effective. I thought Pot looked really sharp. He looked fit, and hopefully he can keep in shape, because he's such a great player, especially when he's really full of confidence and has a few games under his belt. Francisco Trincão, I mean, we talk about him every week. He's such a talented a player, but you need these guys to stay fit. Morten Humlen, you need him to stay. You know, that's kind of died down, that the rumors of him going, but he's such an important part of that team. You already have Diomande, who seems to be injured. I don't know how long that's going to be for, but he's a very important player. The Maxi Araujo injury as well. And just to sort of go back to the game, yeah, Sporting were really good. They were way better than Casapia. But there was a sort of tricky moment there right at the beginning of the second half where you're only one goal up, you get the double injury. Casapia are playing a little bit better, not incredible, but they're playing a bit higher up. They're starting to get a bit more of the ball. They're starting to move it around a bit better. And if you concede then it gets a bit trickier. Then obviously they score the goal in the 60th minute or so, and then that's it. They just sort of see the game out very professionally. But Sporting were able to navigate that situation because it could have been quite tricky with the double injury. But I thought Luis Suarez looked really good, really, really impressive. I think Conrad Hart is going to find it hard to get back into this team as more than a squad player, really, because he was so sharp. His movement around the box was so good. He was unlucky to really not score a goal. And I thought, generally speaking, I think if Sporting keep playing like this, I think they're going to be very effective. It's going to be difficult to sort of contain them unless you're kind of unless you're dominating possession, but the Sporting team don't need to dominate possession to hurt you as well. That's the sort of difference, I think, from this team to the Ruben Amorim teams, really, is that they don't need to have, 60% possession and just suffocate you that way. They can just really quickly hurt you.
Absolutely. And I think, you're right to highlight the striker Suarez in that aspect as well, because I think that was something he was very effective at. And it was a very good performance. It was the performance of a striker making their debut, wasn't it? It was a player who really, really wanted to score, and he did a lot of things right, even if he wasn't quite able to get on the score sheet, which I'm sure will come very soon. Kev, I don't know if you do want to touch on it, what you alluded to and what Andrew alluded to with the injuries, because that was the only kind of thing that soured the night from Sporting's perspective, with Araujo and Diamande both going off injured. Although perhaps the positive spin is that you look at the players that they were able to bring on as replacements. Zinho da Bast, I mean, what a quality player to be able to bring off from the bench. So, how do you see that? Do you think that's going to be, depending how long-term injuries are, of course, do you think there may be any issues with squad depth? Because I know Sporting are still in the market for new players, so we could see more additions.
It's very, very unfortunate considering Diomande might be probably Sporting's most important player, considering Gyökeres is gone, and probably excluding perhaps Hjulmand and Pott. Diomande, like the calmness, the serenity he brings to that back line is crucial, and he's very much complementary to Inácio, considering he's more of the physical presence and his recovery pace is very, very underrated. Inácio perhaps makes that step forward, brings the ball out, maybe he's better passing range, and they're very complementary. And De Bas, as much as he did look very good in pre-season and he has a lot of quality, he's a very different type of defender. He's bulking up a little bit because I think you could maybe make the case, especially when he was in midfield, you could see that he was a little bit hesitant to put his foot in and to be a little bit more aggressive in a tackle. So I think at best you might have a little bit concern about that more than anything else. I think it's a huge loss to Diomande anyway. And if he's not back for the Porto game, for example, I think it's a bit different if you have Diomande on Samu in comparison to De Bast. I think
That's a
that's a
good
little bit
point.
more of the worry. In your general case, I think it might even be a slight upgrade if you look at De Bast's passing range, which is arguably better than Inácio's even, and that's really a selling point. In case of Araújo, I think that's more concerning just because you've got Jesus out through suspension and Nuno Sanches doesn't look like he's returning to competitive football that soon. So here we go. Will is a guy you'll play and fill a role there if it's needed, or even if it's to rotate with Mangush, who came in straight away for his debut and he looked decent. The end product in the final third wasn't particularly there, but he looked energetic. He looked fit,
Looked
brought the
eager
ball
to
forward
please.
with some pace. So look, for 300,000, I think Sporting have probably done a lot worse in the past.
Absolutely.
He could probably do the job, but considering the performance they had against Benfica, the importance that he's had in other big games, like the game against City, which was probably a standout last season, that is quite concerning. And just the fact that Sporting first game back, you think finally full squad ish. Whoever who's still out is almost to return, and there you go, have another two injuries, and they look like it will be about a month. Yeah, there's not a dull moment at Sporting at the moment, especially in the medical department. So it is a shame because as much as we mentioned, even Kocharashvili came in, had a few good touches. Again, looks very commanding in the middle of the park. Suarez, his hold up play was brilliant, as you guys have already mentioned. Yeah. As much as the players coming in has made an impact, we're still losing them. So, yeah, we'll have to see if that continues. Then Sporting might quickly be in trouble again because, as Andrew has mentioned, it's very dependent on the individual technical quality and being better than your opponent in that aspect in the final third. And if that starts fading away, then there might be a little bit of trouble.
And Kevin, just quickly before we move off on this topic, I'm interested to hear from you. Do you think the manager sees the best future at the back? Because obviously he was used quite heavily in midfield last season. I was just wondering if that's something that is like a long-term solution, or was that just a kind of fill in the gap and now there's midfield reinforcements, they don't need him there anymore?
Yeah, I'd probably say that was a little bit more of a circumstantial thing because as much the bus was probably one of the first ones to go there, and then we started picking in the B team for the likes of Felicissimo, Brito, Areola even had a couple of minutes with João Pereira. Yeah, I would say that his future is seen at the back whilst Morita is still around because at the time that Khosrowshahi was mentioned and brought in, it was said that it was to kind of safeguard against his exit because his contract does run out in 2026. So I'd say whilst those two are still are there and Yuleman stays, I'd say the bus is probably going to fill out at the back more than he will in midfield.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. We should touch on Casapia, of course. Andrew, I'm not sure in these situations how much we can take from these games. I think Kevin made a good point that perhaps you expect him to be a bit more defensively solid. But, from what I know about Casapia from last season, it's a team punching above its weight. It's a manager who's impressing with what he's able to get from this team. You do always, from a neutral perspective, of course, hope that a smaller team in this type of game is at the very least, you can't guarantee results, you can't guarantee things going your way in order to win a game against a much bigger club, but you can kind of hope to at least make your mark on the game and gain some credit that way. It wasn't particularly spectacular from their point of view, and I don't think they were really able to make that much impact on the game at all.
Yes, they were playing a very good team. They were just completely outclassed, I think, on the day. They also don't look fully sort of match fit. Everyone doesn't really look match fit. There's probably a combination of things, but you do expect them to at least be good defensively because that's always been a sort of Casapia thing. I don't think it was all like doom and gloom. They did have a few sort of positives. I think some of the players, I mean, Kevin's already mentioned Chamba. I thought he was really good. Cassiano's hold up play was pretty good, but you always expect that from him. He's always really solid in that sense. Larrazabal was good as usual on the right. He played pretty well, and I think there's probably a few other issues to sort of figure out. Jean Pereira is probably working on it, trying to see how to get them sort of playing a bit better because if they carry on like this, yeah. I don't think it's going to be a great season because compared to what we saw from them last season, doesn't look too good. I thought Yacine Okili as well was pretty good. He didn't do anything because he couldn't do anything, obviously, because of the way Sporting were. But I thought he played pretty well considering what he was up against.
Yeah, okay. You said you expect him to maybe be a bit better than what we saw in this game as the season goes on. What kind of stuff are you hoping to see from them maybe in the more manageable games that they have coming up?
I think they're just very solid, usually in all aspects of the game, to be honest. So I mentioned, usually quite solid at the back. João Pereira had them playing quite good football. And I think it's one of those situations, a bit like Moreirense, where they're not one of the teams with the big budgets, but they seem to unearth a couple of gems. And you usually bet on Casapia to come up with like a Godwin or Leilu. They've always had those sorts of plays that you could see that perhaps won't make major waves in European football, but do tend to make those sort of jumps to a Vitória or to a Braga. You usually depend on them to have quite a few underrated, pretty good players. The likes of like Larrazabal, who last season was probably one of the better right backs in the league. Usually you expect to see a little something, a few difficulties brought to the traditional big three. They're usually quite good at least making the job a little bit uncomfortable. Last season, near the end of the season, they beat Braga. Got it up here. Porto was only a 1-0 loss. They beat Benfica. So that's it. Being at their home, you would expect them to be a little bit more compact. And they did hold down the fort relatively decent enough, considering Sporting did not manage to get the first goal in too early. But I think that was just a matter of. Well, it is what it is. The ball doesn't always go in at the first time of asking. That's the thing. I think I've got quite high standards for Casapia at this point because the budget is still probably relegation threatening, and they've always been mid-table, not really dragged into that battle. So I think maybe we are being a little bit harsh. And as Andrew said, the match fitness clearly wasn't 100% there. They'll be fine. I think it's just a little bit disappointing because usually you do expect to be a little bit surprised by them at this point.
Is a Juan played his second season? It is, right? His second full season now.
At least.
He had a couple of losses struck right at the start of the season, and everyone was looking at him. So this might have been a jump too big, and all of a sudden went off to win.
Yeah.
Bit of a good streak in the middle of the season where it really matters, and they usually sort them. They've never really been dragged into that sort of relegation battle, 13th, 14th sort of area.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a team I always enjoy following because it's, as you've both pointed out, a team punching above its weight in terms of budget, but doing so by good club management and finding interesting players from interesting places and building that way. So hopefully that continues this season because it's a team that, yeah, we definitely enjoy following. We should move on, of course, to Porto's game. But Andrew, before we start, I think it's important to talk about Jorge Costa, of course, because it's the first time we've been able to record a podcast since the tragic passing of Jorge Costa, someone I think you can only describe as not just a Porto legend, but a legend of Portuguese football. And it was such a tragic and shocking loss for such a young man to pass away so suddenly. So, of course, we want to put on record our condolences to his family and loved ones. But I wondered, as a Portista, if you had anything you wanted to say about the great man.
I think the suddenness is really what shocked everyone because, you know, we would see him every week, you know, during the season, you'd see him on the bench. He was now the director of football and he was, you know, in front of the cameras all the time at the club. And to just see him one week and then the next week, you know, you get this terrible news that he's had the heart attack and then he's moved on. It was really sad. You could see the reaction even on Twitter. You could see how many people were just so shocked by it and how much he meant to so many people. You know, yeah, huge Porto legend, never be forgotten. You know, it's he's done so many incredible things, won so many league titles. He won, you know, the Champions League in 2004. He scored the goal in the UEFA Cup the year before as well. And he was exactly the type of player you think about when, like, a leader, a captain, someone that will sort of put his head through a wall for Porto, which is, you know, just a great thing. And then more broadly for Portuguese football, you know, he played for the Seleção like 50 times. He was part of that team, the under 20 team, you know, with Figo and Luís and Rui Costa, and he was a big part of that team. And just overall, a legend. He will be missed, and it was so good to see the amount of sort of the tributes during the game, you know, during the Vitória game, and just to see everyone unified after a tough few months for Porto as well. You know, Pinto Costa didn't pass that long ago either, and the club sort of going through some issues, and then to lose a legend like this really, it does hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. And you're so right also to point out that not just a legend from the past, but someone so heavily involved in the club today. And, you know, we're about to discuss a win and we're talking about Porto on the trajectory of having quite an exciting season, you know, so that legacy continues, the work that he was doing, you know, right up until the very end with this club. And you could see the players and the staff and everyone were very emotional because it was someone that they knew so well. So yeah, a real tragedy and someone whose legacy, as you say, will live on forever. Let's discuss the game then, because it was, I think, fair to say, the most eye-catching performance over the weekend, and it came courtesy of Marco Ferraioli's Porto side. It was an incredibly dominant win against Vitória. They earned themselves a 3-0 win with goals from Pepe and two from Samu. A game where Porto were really able to show what they're going to try and do under Ferraioli, I think. It was a really kind of statement performance coming off the back of what we've seen in, obviously, under Anselmi in the Club World Cup and things like that. They looked frightening on the attack at times, large swathes of players getting forward at pace on the attack. The first half in particular showed a lot of promise. Vitória, I thought, were able to kind of shore things up. Second half, I'm sure that was what was discussed in the changing room at halftime when they were 2-0 down, although they did still concede the third goal. But yeah, Andrew, I'll come straight back to you as the Porto fan. I think everyone, it's fair to say, was quite impressed by what they saw in this game.
Yes, hugely impressed. You know, Faraoli in a short amount of time, he's been able to adapt to the squad that he has. Sure, he's brought some players in, but he's been able to adapt to the squad and bring out the best in his individual players. Thought Alan Varela had one of his best games for us. You know, he's joining in on the attacks, which is something that he didn't often do. You know, his passing, like his sort of progressive passes, were a lot more. It was happening a lot more because it's not something that he was doing a lot before. Samu had this incredible game. You know, Samu, he's always going to give you that sort of intensity and that energy. And he was a pressing machine in this game. A few times he causes this chaos when he's pressing, chaos for the defense, for the team in possession, for the defending team, right? And he's just all over them, and he sort of won the ball a few times high up because of that. And I think that's exactly what Fiorello wants. He wants that high press, winning the ball in those high places, and then you just flood people forward the way we saw in that game, which was it was incredible. I thought he made a great decision on the first goal. Samu, he made that little pass that goes on for the for Pepe's great finish. His finish on the disallowed goal was
True.
really good. That was a
Yeah.
really good finish. And then the header, I think that's something that's going to happen a lot this season, especially with Alberto Costa's delivery. He's quite good at crossing the ball. Same with Gabri Veiga, very good at crossing the ball. So I think that's a sort of weapon that they could use when things maybe aren't working out. But things were working out in this game, so that was just sort of a just a good thing to happen. And I thought Benrahma looked really good. Alberto
Yeah.
Costa, great game. Gabri Veiga again, very good. Fraholt didn't have his best game after the sort of the early games in the preseason, but he was, you know, he quietly did what he had to do. But you know, after the preseason where everyone was just sort of going on about it, myself included, he just sort of did what he had to do. Didn't light the world on fire, but you know, didn't make any mistakes either. So the front line press really effectively with Samuel. He sort of brings that intensity, and he continues to leave Mora out, much to the dismay of Portista, Rodrigo Mora, this is,
Yeah.
and probably to the dismay of Jorge Mendes as well. So because I think Farioli wants that security and build up, and he wants to switch to the midfielder to add more speed, you know, when sort of going forward. And he wants more sort of intricate passing between the front three, whereas Moura brings you more in a 1v1, and his decision making is still the decision making of an 18-year-old. Do you know what I mean? He's very much an attacking player who's 18, who wants the ball, who wants to take shots, who wants to take on players, whereas you sort of need the team to play as a unit. That's at least what Farioli wants. And one more thing I'll mention is Farioli's teams in the past have been criticized for not scoring enough goals, particularly his Nice teams, and that was a big problem. They took a heck of a lot of shots in this game, and a lot of them from outside of the box. And I think that's an instruction. I think he's saying just shoot. I think there was a point where they realized Charles in goal was not the greatest, but
Well, that's where the third goal came from.
yeah, exactly. And then you could see they tried it again later. I think it was a Stekiel maybe that tried the same thing later. But there were a lot of shots in that game, and I think that's probably an instruction from him. Oh yeah, and one more negative, Martin Fernandes obviously getting
Of
injured. He's going to
course.
be out for about 2 months. It looked quite serious. You know, you never like to see that kind of thing. I guess the positive is that Francisco Mora is back in training, so he'll be back hopefully soon because you really need him starting in that position if Martin Fernandes isn't there.
Yeah. No, a great summary. And it was funny because I think Victor Fröholt was the player that I was kind of most keen to watch. And so I was keeping an eye on him. And I think, to be fair to him, I think possibly it was a case of Pretoria had also identified him as a kind
Yeah.
of danger man, and you could see they were trying to play him out of the game a little bit, although it didn't, obviously it didn't quite work because they couldn't keep Porto out at all, really. Kevin, I mean, I want to come back on Samu because whether, he was, I think he's a very interesting player to look at for Porto because the narrative before the game, perhaps over the summer, was whether he was even the right guy for this team, and also either because he might be poached by another club or because he was right for Farioli's system, it kind of seemed like there were question marks over whether he would still be involved. And I think he answered that question himself quite literally with the celebration. He seemed to be suggesting, pointing to himself and the pitch to say, this is where I belong. But it's important to highlight because it was a very very impressive individual performance in a way that I think not everyone was convinced would happen. But it looks like he's there, he's committed, and he's ready to kind of to lead this team in the way that Farioli wants his striker to lead the team.
Yeah, regardless of the analysis that was made of Samuel when compared to De Jong and their characteristics and what Farioli might demand, end of the day, that is exactly what you want from your number nine in a performance. You want him to be hungry, intense, especially with the physical, just freak of nature that he is physically. That is what you need Samuel to be doing. You need him to be rushing into the box, and that's where he dominates the box when he's in there. That's what he's good at. It's a classic number nine in that sense. And when you put him next to a player like De Jong, he will have his uses, I have no doubt. But Samuel can definitely be that main guy. Even if he's not the most intricate in his hold-up play, he has been evolving. He has been improving that in that aspect. He's not perfect, but you can see the evolution. Even then, he's a little bit more comfortable. It's coming a little bit more naturally to him, dropping back and when to really rush into the box. So, yeah, and I think the celebration, the first one especially, that says it all. And
Well,
as
the thing
much
that
as,
made me laugh, sorry to
yeah.
interrupt, was Luke de Jong on the sidelines with his vest on, kind of warming up, and he just had a look on his face, kind of like, ah, maybe I'm not going to get quite as many chances as I
Yeah.
thought.
I think people exaggerated a little bit when they saw the sign. He's like, this is an amazing signing. He's going to challenge Samuel. He's like, okay, relax. It's a good signing. It's brilliant for a squad. Like, even just
True.
looking at the experience,
Yeah.
but Samuel is still Samuel. Like, he did score 20 goals last season.
Exactly.
It, it's not a bad player just because Porto did look overall poor and the form did drop off a little bit at the second half of last season. It's like, we're not going to forget that it is the same guy who is wanted across Europe, who the raw potential is absolutely unbelievable. Like, we will respect Samuel a little bit more than what apparently the hold up play, which he obviously did to a decent enough standard, but that displaces his goals and everything else that he has done and is continuing to do. Everything in perspective, I think, is what this performance also showed us. And yeah, I think he's definitely going to be a standout. But other than that, I think I would agree 100% with Andrew. I think Albert Costa is definitely what Porto needed as another fullback option. Francisco Moura was very good last season, and him coming back has come at the right time because it is very unfortunate for Martin, who last season it seemed to be him who had a very good connection with Samu, especially on the cross. I think that's been replaced regardless. And Moura is a bit of a different player, but will have no problem fitting it in as long as it's not Zaidu, because you do see a little bit of a drop off when it's Zaidu coming in.
You're being generous. A little bit of a drop off,
Yeah.
yeah.
And since I'm on one of perhaps giving flowers to a player who has received a little bit of criticism in the past, I'm not going to say that Pepe hasn't deserved it for his lack of production, especially in the last couple of seasons, you could probably push it to. That was a very good performance from him. He's always looked good outside of the final third. He always has his sort of role, especially progressive play, carrying the ball forward. He's always been present in that aspect, but in the final third, he's been disastrous at times. It does look slightly more confident, and it did look a little bit better. And he combined very well with Albert Costa, so I think I'll push another little word to him. I'm sure we're going to get into Vitória in a second, but I do want to bring a little bit of attention to Charles because I'm personally affected by the fact that he's been the man to substitute Varela. Just because I do remember Charles at Marítimo, and there is a reason that often it was Amir in goal and it wasn't Charles, because as much as he will look good and he will make a couple of good saves, if I think if someone makes a save compilation of his, all of the saves are pushed to the front. Every single one is into the danger area. You could see it happen. It's like, it's a matter of time. I could see that third goal happening. It's like Charles, he can be very consistent for half a game, and then there is a mistake in him, unfortunately. I don't think he's an upgrade on Varela as much as he did receive his fair share of criticism. And I thought, before we get into Vitória completely, It's a very good point. Andrew May's like, yes, they were shooting on sight. Yes, it's because Charles has the attention span of a goldfish. I don't want to be too rude to him, but yeah, poor guy. He's not made for starting regular games, I don't think. He's very much a role player, and
I think it's going to be a long season. It's going to be a long season for him.
yeah, we saw his two sides, I think, because he did make decent saves, but then I don't want to say that he was always coming, but if we look back, that he always saves to the front, always like push it away from the goal. Come on, Charles, you can do better.
I have to say, this might be an unpopular opinion, but listen, I wasn't necessarily sure why they needed to get rid of Varela. I know he wasn't perfect, but he offered some experience and he had good games. But I accept completely that he wasn't the greatest keeper in the world either. Although, as you say, Kev, I don't think they've particularly upgraded. We will come on to Vitória, of course. But Andrew, I did want to go back just briefly. We don't have to spend too long on it on Rodrigo Moura, though, because, listen, whichever way you look at it, I know this is almost like tabloid stuff, but it's a statement, like, to leave that player on the bench. And I wonder what you think it's saying to the player, and what do you think he needs to do if he's gonna be a big player under Farioli?
So I saw a fun conspiracy on Twitter about they're keeping him on the bench just until the transfer window closes, which
It's a
obviously
great idea.
is silly, but it's fun to think that. I really think it's just a case of he wants to use him as an impact player for now. He's a young player. Maybe there's something he doesn't like about the way he plays. I'm not sure, but Rodrigo Moura is more of an individual player. And he's a young player. He's a young, hungry attacking player. That's normal. They're all like that when they're young. He's very talented. Great player. I'm sure he will be very important for us this season. But just for now, he's going to have to be patient. It's working for Farioli. If it's not working, then we'll see what happens. He might have to do something. But for now, it's working. The way he wants them to play doesn't, I guess, suit Rodrigo Moura in his mind.
Yeah, no, and I think it's an absolutely fair kind of situation. There is always, of course, a balance where you need to develop young players, you need to give them an opportunity to play and make mistakes, and in a more cynical way, sometimes you do need to almost put them in a shop window if that's what the club wants. But I think I said it last week, I don't necessarily have a problem with a kind of prodigal player like Rodrigo Moura, someone with a gift at such a young age, who clearly is destined for big things, to learn the tough side of playing men's football, which is that you're not always going to be the star person. Sometimes your manager's going to want more from you. Sometimes you're going to be on the bench. And I think, it's healthy for young players to learn that side of the game.
I think you can also argue that the Portuguese league is one of the leagues where a lot of young players, sort of like these kind of prodigy type players, a lot of the times they play a lot of minutes. They're in the first team, they stay in the first team, and then they go very quickly. And if they don't learn that side of it, where it's like, well, it's not working for you now, you're gonna have to work hard on the training pitch or whatever it is, sort yourself out off the pitch, whatever it might be, then you sort of get your João Felixes and these kind of players. I don't want to be mean to him, but.
No, sure.
Because there's so many examples of players that are very young and they leave, and you want them to sort of learn the hard stuff early.
I think it's a very, very fair point. Very fair point. But look, he's a fantastic player. I'm sure we'll be seeing a lot of him this season. All right, Kevin, talk to me about Vitória then. Other than Charles, obviously, we've already touched on that. You don't have to dig him out again, mate. But it was a very good opening 30 seconds from Vitória, I thought. After that, things got a little bit stickier. They were blown away first half, and I think they came back out in the second half a little bit more solid, a little bit, they kind of stemmed the tide a little bit. But listen, they didn't get anything out of the game. It wasn't what they were hoping for. I don't know. What do you read into it?
I think they were incredibly poor, to be perfectly honest. And it's a funny situation because when you try and say that they were extremely poor, I think as we did Casapia, there is a danger that you take a little bit of merit away from the performance of the team who deserve 100% all the plaudits. But I just look at that Vitória backline, the amount of times that they were caught dawdling on the ball, Porto just swarming them, not especially a pressing trigger, but just a normal press, a couple of players even. And they were just giving the ball away with absolute ease. And it was just very disappointing from that aspect because Vitória, for the longest time, they were bringing through quite exciting players from even from their academy, and they were very much seeing that like they were going to bridge the gap to bring a little bit more competition, especially to Braga as a consistent team to battle for that fifth or fourth even place. And I just look at this squad at the moment and it does look like it's a little bit of a tier below than what perhaps we got used to for a while. I don't see their next talent, maybe from apart from Handel and Thiago Silva, who's been class over the last few seasons. I don't see the next Bamba. I don't see a Tapsoba. I don't see players of that quality. And I don't see too many players who really bridge that sort of gap. And I don't want to say that it's all doom and gloom, because I think recently, apart from their financial issues, where they have had to sell some decent talents, that it's all doom and gloom and like the squad won't get better and they don't have other options. I think Arcangel is a player that can make a lot of an impact and can really change the fortunes, especially creatively, because as much as Vitória were poor defensively and caught dawdling, I think there was a real difficulty in making any sort of incision in the final third beyond that Porto defence. Van Felix looked full of ideas and none of the execution. Nonsense, it was one of his quieter games, realistically. He's usually very similar to Pedro Gonçalves, what he used to do at Sporting, sometimes becoming the third midfielder and really making an impact in the middle of the pitch. I really didn't gauge that sort of impact from him. I wasn't very impressed with Gustavo Silva either. His hold-up play, he looked quite off the mark, and considering that's kind of Nelson Oliveira's selling point, as in the final third, he has been criticised in the past. I thought that was quite peculiar, especially as an ex-Benfica product. You think he'd perhaps be quite up for that sort of battle. I don't know. I was very, very, very disappointed with their overall attitudes compared to Porto, because it seemed like you had two sides of the spectrum. One team who swarmed the opposition at any given chance, and that's the real switch in mentality. Even if you want to take tactics away from that, I think that's definitely the difference between Vitor Bruno and even Anselmi, and now Farioli. That's really what I'm impressed by. And Vitória, it looks like very lethargic. And first game of the season, you don't really want to see that. You can excuse a bit of a lack of fitness, but I don't think you can excuse the fact that you're giving so many balls away, and they're very excused. It's not a sloppy pass from a lack of match fitness. It's really just not being able to get the ball out of your feet. It's not having a solution and looking completely disynchronized at the front. So, yeah, I think I look at Vitória's bench. I like Oliveira for the role that he plays. I like Arcangel. I thought Lebedenko brings something very different to Miguel Maga, who I wasn't particularly impressed by. Don't think he's suited for that sort of right centre-back role at all. I personally like Fabio Blanco, what I saw of him last season at Marítimo. And Beni Mukendi made quite a good impact at Casapia. I think he could have shored up the midfield, potentially. Perhaps give Thiago Silva a different role, maybe a little bit ahead. Maybe do that instead of Nuncens and have someone opening up wide. I don't know. They've got a few options. I don't think it's all doom and gloom, but that was quite a disappointing performance for the team that you'd think is one of the most likely to give Porto some difficulties at this early stage.
Yeah, I wondered whether, I mean, you know, not to make excuses, but I just wondered whether it was a case of a kind of a new manager just trying to change a little bit too much too soon. Some of the choices I thought were a bit strange. I think, yeah, Gustavo Silva up front, when you've got Nelson Oliveira on the bench in a big game against Porto where you're going to need to get stuck in, you know, you're going to have to do the dirty side of the game. I mean, it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Gustavo Silva playing as a lone striker for me is not something I think is really what he should be doing. And yeah, even some of the new defenders like Nobrega playing and all those kind of players who you think maybe he could have just kept it a little bit simpler. I mean, Andrew, I know you were rooting for the opposition, but I don't know if you've got any kind of thoughts on how they played.
I thought they were quite poor. A lot of the players looked like they, I don't want to say disinterested, but they just didn't seem like They knew what to do in a lot of situations. There was a disconnect. I think there was quite a big gap between the midfield and defense a lot of the time. They just didn't seem synchronized. So you saw a lot of space in there. I agree. I thought Akanji looked really good when he came on. I was quite happy that Nelson Oliveira wasn't starting. I was like, okay, that's at least we have that sort of going for us. He's not like a 20 goals a season striker, but he's a problem and he cares. And you saw that when he came on, he got a yellow card. He was getting stuck in and he was trying to sort of get the team going. And he's a leader because of all the experience he has. I thought Ndoye looked speedy. He looked lively. He was a couple of miscontrolled sort of runs and stuff, but he looks sort of lively and maybe there's a way to use him. But yeah, I think they'll be okay. I think he'll probably figure out a way to get this team playing better because there are still some good players in there. But I've been thinking about sort of past Vitória teams, and this is one of the weaker ones of the past few years for sure.
Yeah, a lot of young players, a lot of inexperienced players, and you couple that with a young and fairly inexperienced manager. On paper, it doesn't sound that great. But listen, a lot of those young players could flourish as the season goes on. We'll keep an eye on them, of course. And gents, let's keep it rolling and move on to another game. Braga, who will be very happy with their start to the season, 3-0 win at home over newly promoted Tondela, although. The scoreline perhaps doesn't tell the full story. I think Tondela were unlucky not to take at least one of the many chances that they created. We'll come on to that, of course, but I do want to start with Braga. In the early games in Europe, guys, we discussed them perhaps not being the most impressive, but listen, maybe they've been using those games to get into the swing of things. They've been improving slightly, and I think definitely, Kev, this was the best performance of their season so far and a good way to start the league season.
100%. I was quite critical of Braga. I am still quite doubtful whether this manager will be the right man to really get the full potential out of a squad who, at the early stages, I think, as we did comment in our own personal group chat, the fact that there's six midfielders on the pitch and no, you don't see the likes of even Vidigal or Roger in the starting 11 and making an impact down the wings. I thought that was completely bonkers.
Yeah, try and spot the manager who learned everything they know under Pep, right?
Yeah, weird that six midfielders in a side. I wonder who does that. But yeah, it just so happens that two of the better performers in this game happens to be Leonard Lel coming up at left back, doing a lot of what he was doing for Casapia, being a threat down the left hand side, really delivering some good service to the front men. Two assists tells the whole story, really. You shouldn't look at football through numbers, but it really does describe the sort of impact that you will have going down that left-hand side. He's a very productive player, and he's just very overall. He's very solid. Whereas the likes of Marin can be criticised for the defensive contribution and not being as solid, and obviously Roger, as always, he doesn't have the goal contribution perhaps to show for his performance, but he's the offensive spark for this Braga side, and he is one of the bigger talents to come out of the league in the next couple of seasons. I have no doubt he will be probably Braga's biggest sell when it's time for him to leave. I feel he was very impressive. Hornacek, as always, I think the impact that he's made since coming in. Matheus being a very good player for Braga overall throughout the career, but getting to a point where perhaps that change was needed, and Hornacek has not disappointed since he's come in. And I think the last player that I really want to say something about, just because I did have a couple of thoughts about the fact that Soumaré was let go to Sheffield. I thought that is a brave decision just because of the quality of the player, one of the more exciting players to be like a revolution last season. I thought he could definitely play a role this season for Braga, but looking at the role that Vitor Carvalho does play and the fact that he is slightly different, the two in midfield and how Vitor Carvalho kind of compensates in the right moments and technically is a right back but still playing his sort of real role ball playing. I think that's kind of an example of why Soumaré was let go, just because it's a very different role to what the double pivot in the midfield plays. Guardiola has been one of the standout performance so far. I thought he was solid, but just it's a little bit more of a complete role than what's somewhere there, which is definitely more holding down the fort than anything else. So I think it's understandable when you consider what the manager demands and what Vitor Carvalho has done, what Gorbi has done more in the last couple of games. And well, you could definitely see the likes of Moutinho coming in and doing in a role that I think if he does a role resembling what Modric was doing at his latter stages at Real Madrid, I think that's definitely, he can definitely still make a massive impact considering maybe the legs aren't there for 90 minutes, but for 30, he's still the classiest player on the pitch whenever he wants to come on. So, yeah, I think the best way to sum up the performance as a whole is perhaps a little bit flattering scoreline-wise because Tondela were not 3-0 bad
No.
at all. A couple of performers, especially down their left-hand side, might be a bit concerning. But I like the likes of the forward, Miro. I like the looks of Joe Hodge.
Yeah.
And overall, I don't think that they look like a side that we might be as worried about compared to Avies, who I think look a lot less inspiring. I think if Vieira definitely made a few adjustments, it's a bit of a system change in comparison to what they were running last season. He is a 4-3-3 man. Anyone who knows him knows that. So he's a little bit different. Perhaps it might take a little bit of time just to cement 100% what he wants to bring to the side. I think they don't look too bad. There is some promise there. I think they should be okay. And in terms of Braga, perhaps they're just heating up and having these players in these positions. Perhaps like the first couple of games was just experimenting, still in a half pre-season, half competitive stage. And obviously you can't fault a manager too much for trying to see what he has at his disposal. Now that Lelo and Koja have come in and made that impact, you would expect them to stay. And yeah, how about we have attackers down the flanks and not midfielders, please? Thank you.
A very good point. And Andrew, that was one of the kind of big the big things to take note of before the game started was the starting 11, which was much changed. And obviously, you can point to things like they're in the middle of a European qualification campaign, which is very important to them, and obviously they want to keep that momentum going. But it was players like Victor Gomes, Zalazar, Lago Bielk, Dorgalej, Ricardo Horta, all on the bench, so very big players for this team that didn't start. Maybe that might have contributed to the kind of slow start that they had, where Tondela really kind of had the best chances of the game for the opening period. But as Kevin's right to point out, the likes of Leon Lello did have a good game, showed that they can fit into this team. Paul Victor, of course, got a goal, did very well. Listen, perhaps it's more a case of they're showing that they're building a squad with decent depth, because there were, listen, a lot of players that played who we've kind of forgotten about, but made a decent impact.
Yeah, and the important thing is going to be using sort of your best players. I think Lelo and Roger Fernandez will be two of the most important players this season for them because they're the ones that bring the width. If you sort of just play narrowly like they did, they sort of their attacks kept getting stuck, and then that would lead to some turnovers, and two of Tondela's big chances sort of came from those turnovers of just the attack just kind of petering around the midfield, not really knowing what to do, and eventually they found sort of the width, and I think that's what he needs to figure out most. Yeah, it was weird to see Ricard Horta not start, but I think you make a good point about sort of Europe and they're focused on that as well at the same time. I thought Diego Rodriguez, who's the young midfielder, he looked all right. Yeah, he didn't really make too many mistakes. I think he lost the ball once or twice, but he was fine. I do want to say Gorbi. Kevin already sort of mentioned it, but Gorbi was really good in midfield. He's very multifunctional, which I think is going to be very important for this sort of Carlos Vicens idea of a midfield. I don't know how many midfielders that's going to be, but he's definitely going to be a very important part of that. And Hornacek, great performance. He just continues. I don't think he's going to stay at Braga too long if he keeps doing this because he's so darn good. As far as Tondela goes, Maviram on the left, I think that's he's going to be an important part of that team this year. That on that left hand side, yeah. Joe Hodge already mentioned, very good. He dictates the tempo really well. And then I thought their goalkeeper Bernard Funch was pretty good. I don't know much about the Tondela team. They kind of were under the radar for me coming into the season, but they have some impressive players, and I thought they played pretty well And I think they're going to be hard to beat for other teams in the league. I think they're going to be pretty hard to beat.
Yeah, I did feel, I had to say I felt bad for them, because if anybody's not seen the game or didn't see the highlights, some big chances at the beginning of the game, I would say two or three real goal scoring chances that they weren't able to take. And then of course having a goal ruled out as well for offside just meant that, you know, the 3-0 really doesn't tell the full story. And I feel a little bit sorry for them in that sense. But of course, it means you can take positives from the game. And by the way, listeners, if you're hearing us talk about a Tondela player called Joe Hodge, you're not mishearing. Yes, this is not a Joe Linton situation. This is a real Irish player called Joe Hodge who plays for Tondela, signed from Wolves. So yeah, definitely one to keep an eye on, because he looked decent in his first start for the in the league for his new club. Let's keep the ball rolling, gents, and move on to Famalicão versus Santa Clara. Probably one of the more surprising results on paper from the opening weekend. Santa Clara fell to a 3-0 defeat away at Famalicão. Santa Clara obviously in the middle of their Conference League qualification campaign, so maybe similar to Braga, we can give them some benefit of the doubt. But nonetheless, a very impressive performance from Famalicão, with goals from Rodrigo Pinheiro, Gustavo Sá, and Gil Dias giving them an emphatic opening day victory. Andrew, Famalicão, not a team that we were able to discuss in our preview show, but one that we do often talk about and have done in previous seasons as this team on the cusp of making an impact in the league. Hasn't quite happened in recent seasons, but maybe on the basis of this result, they might be a little bit closer to that.
Yeah, and I think what I saw more from Famalicão in that game was you could see a lot more established sort of patterns of play, something you didn't really see too much last season, except towards the end. I thought Rodrigo Pinheiro had a great game, scored a great goal. You know, the sort of the anticipation to sort of win the ball back, the run, the dribble, the finish on the weaker foot was so good, and he's very important to how the Famalicão team are going to play. I think a lot of the sort of good things they do is on the wings, and that's, you know, fullbacks generally, or really good fullbacks, are in short supply. Anyway, Gustav Sarr was energetic. You know, he took his goal well. We already know about Gustav Sarr. He's been around for a while. Seems like he might be on his way out of the league, which is a shame. But you know, he's I don't think he's at the level to play for one of the big three right now. So he might have to go elsewhere and you know, find something new. Gil Dias, another standout. He scored a nice goal. I thought Eliseu up front, he made some good runs. He's a big sort of imposing guy, and it was, you know, the assist to for the Gustav Sarr goal. He did well in that sort of attack. So maybe this will be the season that Famalicão finally find some consistency. They look a lot better than they did last season. You know, having a preseason, having time with the team is really valuable, and I think we're seeing the benefits of this. So yeah, I thought they looked really good for Santa Clara. I mean, I think they're just a little bit tired, a little lethargic. I think they're focused on other things, because they didn't really look like themselves. I mean, they weren't doing too many things differently to what they usually do, but it just wasn't as good. You know, it's really hard to describe.
Yeah, I think in a very simple way, they were just, it sounds oversimplistic, but just not quite at it. You know, it
Yeah.
just, and again, you could probably put it down to tiredness. I mean, Kev, what did you make of Famalicão? Because it just feels like for me, sometimes they've been in past seasons a little bit trigger happy with managers, perhaps, or just not quite able to kind of build on what I think they do a lot right, especially in the transfer market. And you look at the squad that they're able to put together. Easily, it could be a that could be a fifth place squad with the talent that they have, and yet it doesn't always happen. But like I said, maybe this year they'll be a little bit more consistent. But very good performance, and you know, Gustavo Sá for me was one of the standouts.
Yeah, I think this might be an anomaly for Famalicão, because it really kind of has been in the transfer market, because they're usually one of the more active players, and this season hasn't been half as busy and chaotic as it usually is, just because this starting 11 is very much closer to what we've been used to in the past, especially when he came up into the league. Pinheiro was there, Suárez was there, Gustavo Sá was there, Gil Dias played his role, I think, and Justin Lajoie's there. It's a very, very interesting base and a very high quality one. And they've kept all of these players instead of the past, where they were losing Banza, the likes of Neuwin Pérez. Players that made an impact when they first come in have a good period, very inconsistent, because obviously there are those sorts of risks when there's a high squad turnover. They used to be that sort of team where 6 months they look very good. The other 6 months, either the manager leaves or there's more turnover in the squad. I think that they're building themselves up to have a bit more of a stable season in this case. And we probably saw the benefit of that in this game because a lot of the standout performances or the standout performance from last season made an impact again today. As Andrew said, Pinheiro, Sá, and I'll say Sorriso just because he'll have a very, very important role with Aranda being out. It speaks volumes just because in the past you wouldn't expect half of these players to still be around because they'd usually, when Famalicão first came up, half of their squad, playing squad, was loans. In a starting lineup, you'd usually expect quite a few loans. These are all players that have pretty much stayed from one season to the next that we saw against Santa Clara. And yeah, I'd say that perhaps we won't see as many fireworks as we have in the past, but stabilization and consistency is probably what they need at this point. And yeah, in terms of Santa Clara, there's not too much that can be said. I think it's just an anomaly of a game where they didn't look as solid as maybe they have in the past, just because the times that Famalicão went forward with real menace, the ball went in. I don't remember Gabriel Batista even making a save. I could be wrong, but it just seemed like every time that there was a shot or a shot on target, it went in. And sometimes it's like that. A goal early, Santa Clara with a midweek game where, look, they might not be as used to it as other clubs. Look, it happens. I am going to defend them a little bit more wholeheartedly than I would maybe another team, just because I did say they would be my standout, like, surprise team, and they'd be really consistent. And yeah, this was a little bit of a shock, to be completely honest. I don't think it'll be a trend, thankfully.
Yeah, I think it was three shots on target, three goals for Famalicão.
Wow.
I'm just looking it up.
Yeah,
but
and one in the sure. fifth minute, it might just be a little bit of a sucker punch, especially the second one was the 19th or 20th. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
one
let's
of
not
those
do,
days, I would say.
Absolutely. Let's not dwell on Santa Clara too much. Don't want to give them too much of a hard time, obviously. Positive affirmations for them. They're midway through their doubleheader against, is it St. Pat's from Northern Ireland? So I'm
Lon.
sure they'll...
No,
Lon, excuse
Lon.
me.
Yeah,
So they'll be hoping to bring that home. 3-0 up after...
They should be able to rest a little bit just because of the scoreline. So perhaps, rotate the squad a little bit.
Exactly that. So fingers crossed that they're able to get that result over the line. And gents, before we wrap up, I personally added this game to the agenda because I have an agenda, and that's a pro Arouca agenda. I hope that Kevin's on my side on this one. Me and Kev have got a similar kind of penchant for Vasco Seabra, shall we say. I don't know if Andrew's on board with that, but it was another team that we didn't have a chance to discuss. Of course, Arouca 3-1, they beat ABS. We're over the Daniel Sousa era now. You know, long gone are those days of Jason Cristo and Rafa Mujica banging in the goals. But maybe this could be the start of a new dynasty under Vasco Seabra. Two goals from Trezza, the Uruguayan winger, and a goal from Naïs Djahara, another winger from Algeria, gave them an opening day victory. Kev, I know you're on my side with this one. It's the start of good things, surely.
Yeah, I will be perfectly honest. When we did our opening episode and we were looking for these sorts of underrated teams that might make a surprise impact, I didn't have it all on my list just because I did look at their list of signings and I can't tell you that I know a whole bunch about them. They are very much unexpected names or from unexpected nations, and it looks like it has paid off for them just because that is a very, very promising first game. I'm not overly impressed by IVS as a whole. I think we've made that apparently clear. I think they're probably candidates to be relegated, probably favourites. So
they lost Guillermo
the
Ochoa, the one likable thing they had about that club.
And the replacement Simão is not all bad. I think it'll be another one, just save after save, but I think it's going to be weathering storms. A little bit like Velho Ferense, I think it's going to be trying to pull off the impossible in that sort of sense. But yeah, Arouca, just very, very impressive. And I have run a bit of an agenda on Vasco Seabra just since, especially his time at Marítimo, where I think he was very much made a scapegoat when perhaps, and since then we've seen that the club is not run in a particularly the best manner, considering the size and the history of it. There was always promising football being played, and he's a very ambitious manager in that sense. And it seems like he has matured with a little bit of a break that he took between his last job and taking over at Orca now. He had about a year sabbatical. You've seen, whoever followed him on social media, yes, I am that sad, I do follow him on social media. He was going all over the place, all over the world, meeting with managers, I think honing his craft overall. And I think he's very matured now. I think he's definitely grounded at Orca and made them defensively solid, comfortable having the ball at their feet, which if you have the ball and you have counter-attacking threats, you're not opening yourself up as much as they were subjected to before him coming in. He stabilised the side and they have brought in a couple of players, especially as I'm sure Andrew might mention if he watched the game, their latest from Bayern Munich 2, Lee, I'm not going to try and attempt his first name. Very, very impressive bags of technical quality. Alongside Foucault, those are definitely the standouts. And that's it. I think that kind of sums up Arouca, a very promising manager who, in glimpses, has shown a lot, probably better equipped forward. And look, it's sometimes a little bit hard to keep up with these sides in terms of transfers, just because not all games are televised. And if you don't know the names, you're probably not going to know a lot about them, especially if they're not from well-known capacity or at a well-known league. But first impressions are very, very positive.
You know, the best thing about Vasco Seabra's little holiday, which I did also follow on Instagram, was he spent a lot of it with, and his name slips my mind, the old Vizela manager who always wore the flat cap.
Pacheco.
Yeah, Álvaro Pacheco. They seemed to be going around Europe together on this little lad's holiday, which was quite enjoyable to follow. Listen, Andrew, can we indoctrinate you? Can we get you on the Arouca train?
I've been a big fan of Vasco Seabra for
Here
a
we go.
while. I think
Yes.
he's been unlucky with some of the things that's happened, but you always see some good football. You see he has a good philosophy of football, and you're starting to see that in the Soroka team. And Soroka is the kind of team you want to root for, because of the way they do things, some of the players that have played for them, particularly this season. I think with the preseason, you're starting to see his identity within this team on the pitch. It was a really beautiful display. You can see all the patterns and the general cohesion. I thought Pedro Sanches and Fakui were really good. And Kevin was talking about Hyunju Lee, which is my best attempt at pronouncing his name. He was
Fantastic.
You're braver than I am.
fantastic. He was really, really good. The goals from Trezor were great. Really good goals. I mean, they had a overall XG of 1.1 and they scored three, but it was
Wow.
some freakish. Yeah, some freakish goals. They played really well. It's exciting times for Arouca fans. And I think it'll be interesting to see how far Vasco Seabra could take this team, because there has been a lot of this kind of him coming into a team, there being some excitement, they're playing some good football, and then things go wrong a bit, he leaves, or the contract gets terminated, or whatever it might be. And you just you don't want to see that for a coach as exciting as Vasco Seabra, because I think he is quite an exciting manager generally.
He was always quite ambitious as a manager coming in. Like, he always gives a lot of power to the players in terms of go forward, have the ball, take chances. And perhaps that is what you need at a lower club at a certain stage in the season. If you're about 14th, we'll say halfway through, that can really make an impact, because all of a sudden you've gone from defending and being a very negative mentality, being empowered with the ball. And that sometimes have a very big impact, as Seabra has showed. But probably his downfall was not knowing to adjust and perhaps find a little bit of a balance between the two, which I think that's what I found at Marítimo. They were just committing so many bodies forward at some stages. When it started to wear off, that sort of boost of energy and confidence, that instead of, okay, let's adjust a little bit accordingly, it's like, no, go, carry on, go forward. And what I find, at least with this performance, is it was very commanding. In terms of possession, perhaps it wouldn't show that way, but I think Gorka was pretty much on top of the game in all phases. I didn't really see a way of Avias really, apart from perhaps the latter stages of the second half, maybe a phase in the first half, they really didn't look like they were going to go forward with too much menace.
Yeah, I think Avias are on the way down. I'm sorry. I really think they're quite poor. I mean, we'll see what happens. There was some one or two positives. I thought Edson Mukwana, who I'd never seen before, I thought he played pretty well. He was kind of tidy on the ball, made some good runs. Rafael Barbosa looked a bit, he looked lively, he looked most likely. He looked like the only guy that was actually trying an attack. But otherwise, I don't think there's much going for
I
this
think,
Avias team.
Andrew, I think you just look at the squad and you don't see anyone who's going to really get them out of it.
No,
You
no.
don't,
You don't think
you really
Nene's got
don't.
another season in him?
Oh dear.
At
Well, he did score, didn't he?
42.
He did score. How
Yeah,
many last
well.
season? Yeah, he got four, but he played 900 minutes. So, yeah, perhaps if he's used more in that capacity and he actually gets the ball,
Yeah.
yeah, I don't. Yeah, perhaps, but yeah, if a 41-year-old, I think he's 41 at this stage, isn't he? 42. If a 42-year-old has to be your saving grace,
You're doing
yeah,
something wrong.
you've
Yeah.
probably got issues.
Perhaps.
Perhaps. All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen. I think we'll leave it there for this week's episode. As a reminder, of course, to check out both Andrew and Kevin on their various social media channels. The links to everything they do will be in the description of this podcast. If you wish to do so, you can also follow Longball Football at Longball Football. And like I said at the top of the show, to check out our Patreon if you want to support the show a bit further. But for now, gents, I think I'll just say thank you much for joining us, and we'll see you next week.